week is Parsha Shmos. On Shmos, there are two levels. There's the basic, the pshat level of, there's a new Parsha. There's a new Parsha, a new Sefer. People like new things. People are always excited at the beginning. There's once a Rosh Yeshiva of Leibowitz, that's all. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chabetz Chaim in Queens. So he had a good sense of humor. A lot of times in Shir he would make jokes. So someone said to him, Rebbe, it says in the Gemara that when you start a Shir, Rabbi would start off with a joke. He'd say something funny. The rest of the time he'd be serious. He said, you, Rebbe, you make jokes throughout the entire Shir. So he said, it's very simple. It says in the Gemara that when you start a Shir, it's to make a joke. So when I'm giving a Shir, I start talking. And 2 or 3 minutes later, people's minds start to wander. So we have to start again. So I have to say something funny again. And then they come back. 2 or 3 minutes later, their minds wander again. So I have to say something again to bring them back. So people like beginnings. That's why I told you that story. Also, I just try to justify the attempts at humor that I make. The cracks that I make. I met a guy recently who was in... I told you this in the Rav Tzedek Chabura, that I met a guy who just got out of drug rehabilitation, and I asked him if it was really all that it's cracked up to be. In any event, you got it, Chaim? You win the award then. I asked him, forget it. So we're starting Shmos, so on the Pshat level, it's a new Parsha. On the Kabbalah level, it's Shovavim. So anyone who went to the Chug on Monday night knows what Shovavim is, or at least has a cursory knowledge. Shovavim is Shmos, Verabo, B'Shach, Yisro, Mishpatim. Some add on Truma Tetzaveh, and a leap year we add on Truma Tetzaveh. And Shovavim means naughty. And there's a time when we try to be Metaken, the Avon Hayadua, what all of the books of Hasidus and Kabbalah and Musar are filled with, the greatest test to man, since the beginning of man. You see the whole Torah is filled with this test. And we try to make any tikkunim that have to be made for the... we fix all of our sins in this area of purity. So whenever you're learning Shmos Ve'erbo B'Shach Yisro Mishpatim Truman Tetzaveh, we'll keep it in mind. So tonight we'll keep it in mind. It says, Vayihi Bayamim Ahem, and it was in those days. Vayigdal Moshe, Vayetze El Echov. So it was in those days Moshe became a gadol, he became big, and he went out to his brothers, Vayar b'sivlosam, and he saw their suffering, Vayar ish mitzri maki yishivri, and he saw an Egyptian man hitting a Jewish man, me'echov of his brothers. Rashi says, Vayigdal Moshe, Vayokfaksi Vayigdal Ayod, it already says he got big. So a previous pasuk says that Moshe got big. So here the pasuk again says that Moshe got big. Why does it say it twice? What does this show you about Rashi? That he paid careful attention when he read the psukim. He noticed that it already says it, so why does it say it again? So you guys can be Rashi too. You don't have to speak French. You can be Rashi, you can read carefully, and you can be Rashi. You don't need Rashi. You can be Rashi yourselves. And then afterwards you can look and see if Rashi agrees with, if Rashi was smart enough to agree with you. So first time it says Moshe got big, and now it says again Moshe got big. As long as I'm mine. So I saw Mr. Dweck raising his hand. What do you say? He grew in status. I see that you were reading Rashi. You're the man. If you can't do it, no one can. So, it's also an Indian now to make jokes. Because when I grew up, they told me that this Kufa is the season to be jolly. It says, oh, you're the baby, Loi. Harisha on the Koma Rashen Yeligidula. It says that the Ramban says that that says something else. Rashi says, and Rav Dweck says, Harisha on the Koma, the first time it's because he got big. He was a big boy. That's the first gadol. And the second time it's that he was elevated in status because Paro appointed him over his house. You see that Jews have always risen to position of power. Wherever we go, we always seem to go high. So there we are. Spain, we went high. Europe, we went high. America, we have a lot of people in Congress, in the Senate. In England, anybody in the English Parliament who's Jewish?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? They made a human being into the Lord. The rabbi, they liked him so much, they made him into the Lord. We were always taught there's only one Lord. But they wanted to give so much cover to a Jew, so they made the chief rabbi a Lord. Pray with the Lord to the Lord. Oh, Lord. So the Americans don't get it as much. The English people will explain to the Americans afterwards what I meant. And the Americans will try to explain to the English people that if God would have wanted us to play soccer, he wouldn't have created us with arms.
So
Moshe became big. He got big, meaning he was elevated. And then after he's elevated, he went out to see the suffering of his brothers. And those Jewish people are being enslaved. And Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't sit in his fancy chair in Pilate's palace, you know, watching DVDs, drinking, ancient Egyptian wine. Rather, he went out to see his brothers suffering because he wanted to feel their pain. So what's interesting is that whenever you look at Rashi, Rashi has a source 99% of the time. Rashi's source is a Medrash, an earlier source, Tanchuma, and there it only says that it says Vayigdal Moshe twice. The first time it meant that he got bigger as a person, physically, and the second time he meant he was elevated in status. And the Medrash doesn't say anything about Paro appointing him over his house. So that Rashi adds, Sheparo Mino Al Beso. And not only that, but the Ramban says differently than Rashi. I looked before the Ramban. Ramban says the first time, what does it mean? He was a gadol, that he got bigger. In other words, he wasn't a child anymore. Now he's a big boy. But Yigdal Ayelet, he didn't need to be, he was weaned. And the second time, it meant that he was a gadol bedas. Now he had seichel. So that would really be the simple meaning of the pasuk. The simple meaning is that first he got big, that he was weaned, he wasn't a baby anymore. And then he got big, he became of age, he had knowledge, he had understanding, he had wisdom. Unfortunately, somebody died today from Camp Simcha. And his name was Eliyahu Raphael ben Zahava Aliyah. Usually they say the father's name, but in Shemayim they know the mother's name. His mother's second name is Aliyah. What? Olav Shalom. That just shows how stupid I am. Eliyahu Raphael ben Zahava. So this learning that we do should be Le'ilu Nishmaso, and he suffered so much in his life that it's hard for me to believe that he can go any higher than he can go, but I'm sure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu even has greater reward to give when people do mitzvahs in his merit. So we should all be saved from terrible diseases, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should heal those who already have the terrible diseases, and those who are no longer with us, particularly this child, should have an Aliyas Neshama, and we shouldn't see any more suffering in the world. That's the goal. The goal is Amen. 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 And I thank Eitan for providing me the name of this child, Eliyahu Raphael ben Zahava. And if you want to learn all of Shas Mishnayos in his memory, I give you permission. Okay, so now we're back to Vayigdal Moshe. Vayigdal Moshe, so why doesn't Rashi say like the Ramban? Simply, he got bigger, he was weaned, he got bigger, he had knowledge. Why did I say he got bigger? He was a big boy, and then he got bigger. Now he was elevated in status in Pilate's palace. So Rashi says that for a reason. Not only that, we have another inyan of Gedula. It says, by Paro, Paro is also a gadol. It says in the book of Yechezkel, Daber v'amar etakom ha-Hashem v'ni alecha Paro melech Mitzrayim, hatanim ha-gadol ha-roitz v'soch ye'olav, v'omar li ori v'ani asitini. It says about Paro, Paro is called the tanim. You know what a tanim is? This big, massive crocodile. This big, scary crocodile. So Paro is a tanim ha-gadol. He's called this big, big crocodile. And what does he say about himself? Well, some translations are crocodile. Call him a crocodile. What does he say about himself? Anili oriva ani asitini. To me is the river, and I created myself. Now, it's Paro is this big vile guy, this arrogant person, who says about himself that I created, not only I created the yore, I created myself. But he's called a gadol. So you see that Moshe is called a gadol, and you see that Paro is called a gadol. So that's always the conflict between two opposing gadolim. You have himself, I'm going to see a gadol today. I'm going to see Paro. Wow. You win the Hamer Award, you get to see a gadol, you get to see Paro. So you have Moshe being a gadol, he's a big man, and then you have Paro. Not only that, but we also have at the end of days, in the Haftorah, we're going to read, V'haya b'yom ha'u yitaka b'shofar gadol. We're going to blow this big shofar. So we're going to try to understand today in the next few minutes, if you're still awake, and even if you're not awake, because I'm going to be awake, because I've fallen asleep in many different positions, but never standing up talking. That hasn't happened to me yet, so I will remain awake. Unless I lie down and stop talking, but I usually don't do that in public. The gadol of Moshe is a gadol, power is a gadol, and at the end of days, it says in Haftarah, we're going to blow a shofar gadol. So let's first talk about what a gadol is. First of all, it's in the Gemara. And this Yevamis is all based on my Rebbe, by the way, the Tolner Rebbe. I didn't make any of it up. It says in the Gemara in Yevamis and Dav Mem Zayin that if you have a katan, if you're a young person, a child even, but you have children, you're a gadol. You're big. And if you're big and you don't have children, you're a katan. So what's the definition of being a gadol? Having children. See what that means in a minute. We have another definition. It says that if you're a gadol, if you're big, and you're still dependent on your father, you're a katan. If you're a katan and you're independent, you're a gadol. So you see from these two places that what's the definition of a gadol? Somebody who is giving, and not somebody who is receiving. If you're a father, you're a gadol because you're giving. If you don't have children, then you're not in a state of giving, so you can't be called a gadol. If you're 35 years old, but you still live, your mother still does your laundry and feeds you dinner. She cuts up your chicken into small pieces and puts it in your mouth. And she says, you better have eat your vegetables. Yeah, so if you're still in your parents' home and you're supporting, being supported by your parents, so then you're a katan. Even if you're a big man, you could be a doctor, a surgeon, a professional musician, a lawyer, a doctor, you could be anything. But if you're being supported by your parents, you're relying on your parents, then you're a katan. If you're a katan, but you're self-sufficient, then you're called a gadol. So a gadol, a katan, is somebody who is receiving, and a gadol is somebody who is giving. Gadol, b'samach al shulchan aviv, says in Bava Metzia, is a katan. And a katan, you're not relying, that's a gadol. So to be receiving from somebody else makes you a katan. To be giving is a gadol. That's also why in Gemara, in Sukkah, you ever learn Sukkah, talk about good achis. Good achis and good asik, it means the wall extends. So a gadol is somebody who extends themselves out. That's the Gimel Dalet. It says in the Gemara, Gimel Dalet is Gemol Dalim. The Gimel is Gemol, that means to give. And Dalet is Dal. A Dal is poor. So Gimel Dalet means, says the Gemara, when they would teach kids the Aleph Beis, they don't just teach them letters, but they teach them values. We don't want to teach our children values. We only want to teach the children letters. So the value you teach the kid is when he learns Gimel Dalet, you say, Gimel Dalet, my sweet son, is Gemol Dalim. Give to the poor. So that's the Gimel Dalet, that's the Gadol, that's the God, that's the extending yourself. So if you're giving, you're a gadol. So those two sources work together. That if you're a gadol and you don't have children, you're a katan, because you're not yet giving. But if you're if you have children and you're a giving person, even though you might be a katan, might be 12 years old, but if you're a father and you're in a state of giving, so that makes you into a gadol. If you're receiving from your parents, then you're a katan, because you're receiving, doesn't matter how old you are. But if you're not, if you're self-sufficient, and certainly if you have children, then you're a gadol because you're giving. It says in the Chumash that if there were two Ma'oris HaGadolim, two big luminaries, Ha'Ma'or HaGadol, the biggest one, is during the day, Ha'Ma'or HaKatan, and the smaller one, is at night. So why is the sun called the big and the moon called the small? Because the sun is giving, and the moon is receiving. So therefore the sun is called big, more hagadol m'shel seyon, because it's giving, it gives off its light to the moon and to the world. And the moon is called small. Why is the moon called small? Because it's in a state of receiving. So again, you see, that's what a gadol is. When you become bar mitzvah, so I assume most of you came bar mitzvah. So that's, you person knows, I'm becoming a gadol now. What does that mean? What does it mean? It means you have to put on tefillin every day, it means you have to bench, you have to daven, you have to do all the good things. But it means that you have to start giving. And that's what it means by Yigdal Moshe. That's the godless of Moshe. It says in the Gemara, there's a story. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yoshua, this is for those who want to look up sources, it's a good thing to do, in Kiddushin, page Lamed Beis, Amed Beis. There was a story of the Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yoshua, and Rabbi Tzadok that were sitting at a party in the party house of the son of Rabbi Gamliel. And Rabbi Gamliel was giving them to drink. And he gave a cup of wine to Rabbi Eliezer, and he didn't take it. He gave it to Rabbi Yoshua, and he took it. Rabbi Eliezer said, what are you doing? How can you take a cup from Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi, and you're going to let him serve you? You're going to let this great rabbi, this titan, this tzaddik, you're going to let him serve you? He said, no, of course I'll let him serve me. Because we find another great man who served. Who is that? Avram Avinu was a gadol, and he served. What does it say? That the Arabs came to him, they looked like Arabs. Ahmed, Yusuf, and Jabril. Yes, so they came to him, and instead of him having his servants serve them, or instead of him saying, oh, I'm sorry, this is an apartheid state, you can go somewhere else, we're not interested. Yes, we want to have a two-state solution. Yes, you go somewhere else to a completely different continent, you go to Alaska, and we will go to, and we will be here, and I don't want to have anything to do with you. That's not what Avraham Avinu did. He said, Yusuf, Muhammad, and Jabril, I want you guys to sit down, and I am going to serve you. So Avraham was a gadol, and he was serving. So you see that even though you're a gadol, not even though you're a gadol, what makes you a gadol is the fact that you serve other people. So that's the explanation of this Gemara. He's not just bringing Avraham Avinu as an example. Oh, it's okay that a great man serves us. You see that that's what a great man should be doing. That's what the definition of a gadol is. Avraham Avinu was the gadol hador. The Gemara uses that language. He was a gadol. He was a great man, a big man, and he served. So you see that gadolim should serve. So now, we know a little bit more about what a gadol means. And now we're going to a little bit of Kabbalah. In order to learn Kabbalah, you have to be a gadol. So, we all know that Cain killed Hevel. That was a sad day. And the Kabbalah teach us that Moshe Rabbeinu is the Gilgal, the soul of Cain, of Hevel, excuse me, was reincarnated into the body of Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu had the soul of Hevel. Now the Mitzri, we know there was a story of an Ish Mitzri who was hitting an Ish Ivri, right? And then Moshe Rabbeinu kills him. And that Mitzri, the Mekubalim teach us, was a Gilgal of Cain. So now Hevel is getting Cain back, and now Cain gets his Tikkun. So this Mitzri had the Koach of Cain Mitzad Atuma, and then Moshe Rabbeinu was able to fix that. Now, what was the fight between Cain and Hevel? What did Cain say to Hevel? Cain said, I'm the Bechor, and I should be getting more. And since they were fighting about who's going to get more, Cain killed him. So what was Cain really saying to Hevel? I'm bigger. I'm the Bechor, I'm the Gadol. So if I'm the Gadol, what does that mean about me? That I should be taking. I should be receiving. Because the bigger you are, the more you get, right? So what's the Tikkun? That Moshe Rabbeinu, who's a gadol in the purest sense, he now goes and kills Cain, because Cain was a gadol in the impure sense of wanting to take. And now Moshe Rabbeinu, who's also a gadol, he removes him from the picture in order to show what the good gadol is. That a good gadol is somebody not who takes, but somebody who gives. And therefore, that's the deeper Kabbalistic explanation of Moshe liquidating this Mitzri who is beating up the Jewish person. So, those who came to the Wednesday night shiur, both of you, who came to my Monday night shiur, what was it, Monday? Monday, we learned Rav Charlap. Who was there? Let's see, one or two people who were there? Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. I see some people raising their hand that weren't there. You know, Wilt Chamberlain, I would say Elva Shalom, not so sure. We once scored 100 points in a basketball. He was famous. He once scored 100 points in a basketball game. 100 points. I did that also, but it took me about 26, 27 games. But altogether, if you add up 3 or 4 points a game, I got there. In any event, so Wilty, he scored. So he said at the game, there actually may be 10,000 people, 15,000 people. He estimates that in his lifetime, 250,000 people came up to him and said, oh, I was at the game. So I asked who came to the shiur, but I see it. It was more than two. But anyway, so we learned Charap, right? And we were talking about the name of Moshe. Moshe. Why is he called Moshe? Moshe! He's called Moshe Kimin Amayim Ishisiyu. So if, what does the word Moshe mean? Because Min Amayim, from the water, Mishisiyu, I drew out. Thank you, Eitan. I drew you out of the water. I drew you, I pulled you out of the water. So how would you say in grammar to be pulled out? If you're going to use the verb Moshe, how would you say it? Mashui. Mashui is grammar. For those who learned grammar, I never learned grammar, but I was taught grammar. I was sitting in a classroom as my teacher was attempting to teach me grammar, and I was counting which young man in my class has the most pimples on his face. That's probably what I was doing. And I did everything I could under the sun in order to keep myself busy when I was bored. And that was one of those things that I did that I don't do anymore because I'm not bored anymore because I like to learn. But in the olden days, they taught me grammar, and I was bored out of my brains. Okay, so I know every time I want to speak Lashon Hara, do an Aveira, I just say no. They're going to send me to Gehenna, and the Gehenna is going to be a dentist chair, and he's going to be giving me root canal as an old lady teaches me Israeli diktuk. That's what it's going to be. This and the English is worse. English grammar, forget about it. Anyway, so that's why I'm going to be a good Jew. I don't want that punishment. Any punishment but that punishment. Grammar and root canal without note. Okay, so where were we? Oh, Moshe, it should be Mashui! It should be Mashui! So that's he was pulled out of the water. So the holy Alshech HaKadosh says that he really was the Moshe. Why? Because what was she doing there by the river? There was something holy about Moshe. That's where the common people, the daughter of Paro, what's she doing bathing with the commoners? There was something about Moshe that drew her to Moshe. So he was drawing her. And that's why we saw it. It says, Vatomer, she said, Ken Amayim Shisiu. I'm calling you Moshe. I'm going to say that I'm calling you Moshe because I pulled you out of the water. But that's not really the reason. Because then your name should be Mashui. What's the real reason? So the Alshev says, it's because Moshe drew her to Moshe to take him out of the water. Or it means that even on a more cosmic scale, his whole essence was Moshe. What was his job? The Jews were in exile. They were suffering. And what does a Moshe do? It pulls you out. That's what a Moshe does. When somebody is suffering, you pull the person out of their suffering. That's Moshe. So it looked like she's calling him that came in Amayim and she see you. But that's what she said. But the real reason is because he had this power. He had this power that drew people to him as he drew the daughter of power to himself. And also, he is now going to draw people, take people out of their suffering. We see that's the entire story of Moshe, right? Why does the Medrash say that Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen as the leader of the Jewish people? Because one day he was a shepherd and one of the sheep ran away. One of the sheep ran away and he ran after, he left the flock, he ran after the sheep. The sheep went to the water, to the well, and went to get a drink. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, oh, I didn't know you were thirsty. Had I known you were thirsty, I would have gotten you a drink. And then he took the sheep, and he put the sheep on his shoulders, and he carried the sheep back. He said, I know you're tired, and I'm going to take care of you. And then he sees an Egyptian hitting a Jew. And he says, hey, what are you doing? And he saves the Jew from the oppressor. And then he sees two Jews fighting. He says, hey, what are you doing? It's not nice to fight. And then he runs away, and then he sees the daughters of Yisrael are being accosted by some men who want to mistreat them, abuse them. So what does he do? He saves them. So everywhere Moshe goes, he's always being Moshe. He's always taking people out of their service. He's always trying to help. And then ultimately he comes back to Egypt, and he's Moshe. He takes us out of Egypt, and then we're coming towards the sea. We're coming towards the sea, and then what does he do? There's water there. We go in, and Kimin Amayim Shisiu, he takes us out of there also. No more water. So that's the Tavkid of Moshe Rabbeinu, to draw us out. Beautiful. So now, it says about Moshe Rabbeinu, that when he came, the Medrash says, when he saw the Jewish people suffering in Mitzrayim, it says, Vayar b'sivlosam, he said, Chavali aleichem, mi yitein musi aleichem, oh, that I could die for you. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what we're supposed to learn. We want to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. I wish I could die for you guys. Very hard. They're doing menial labor. We're not used to this. We're Jews. We're accountants. We're in real estate. You know what I mean? We don't do menial labor. You know the story of the little boy walking with his grandfather in Tel Aviv? Little Jewish boy. And the granny, you know, in the olden days, the Zionists came, they built up the state with their two hands. They weren't Arab. They didn't want the Arabs around to build it for them. The Arabs weren't interested in building it for them. They did the hard work with their hands. So the little boy's walking with his grandfather. And he says, you see that building over there? And he says, yeah. He said, I built that with my own two hands. He says, oh. And then they go to another building. He says, "You see that? I built that too." He says, "Oh." And they go to a beautiful orchard, and they've trees planted. He says, "See that orchard?" He says, "Yes, Abba, I see it." And he says, "I planted that orchard." He says, "Oh." And they get to another, they get to a highway. He says, "See that highway?" He says, "I paved that highway." He says, "Oh." He says, "Tell me something, Saba. Did you used to be an Arab?" Right? You understand? No. The Jews used to build also. So Moshe Rabbeinu sees the Jews being all this hard work, and he's like, "Oy vey." And then he saw that a big burden was on a little kid's shoulder, and a small burden was on a big person's shoulder, and a man was carrying for a woman for a man stuff, and it was impossible for them. An old person was carrying what young people normally carry. So Moshe Rabbeinu went, and he left his high, this is what Medrash says, he left his high stoop, and he went to help them. He made as if he was helping Paro, but he was really helping the Jewish people. So that's the godless of Moshe. That's why Rashi says, Vayigdal Moshe. Don't just say Vayigdal. Vayigdal Moshe. He became big in his Moshe-ness. What is the Moshe-ness? This ability to help others and to try to take people out of their pain. That's the Vayigdal Moshe became a gadol. He became a gadol at what? At being Moshe. And that's why he learned that when it says Vayigdal Moshe, it means that Paro elevated him. In other words, that Paro gave all that he had to Moshe. That he's going to be ruling over the over his house. Mamuna Obeso. Why? Because he understood that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't just a person who was interested in himself. Moshe Rabbeinu was a person who was interested in others as well. So the second it says, "Vayigdal Moshe v'yetze alecha v'yavisiv lotzam," this was he saw that Moshe Rabbeinu was the type of person who was able to care about other people. So it's not just like the Ramban says that now he became a bar das. Now he became somebody who has understanding and knowledge, but somebody who knows how to help other people, somebody who's able to take responsibility and be a leader. So therefore, Rashi says that minola beisim, he appointed him. Now, what's the godless of Paro? We said Paro is a tanim gadol. So, if gadol on the good side is Moshe, then gadol on the bad side is Paro. What's the godless of Paro? That Paro was also willing to share. Paro was also willing to help. How did he help? Because he wanted to get the Jews to start doing hard labor. So the Medrash says that he helped them himself. Imagine the king. The king is carrying heavy bricks. So they said, if he's doing it, then we're going to do it also. So they started to do it, and then he stopped, and then they continued. So you see that Paro also had this godless, so to speak, of being able to go outside of himself and help. But why did he do it? He did it for evil purposes. But that's the battle. You always have a battle between the Tokef HaKedusha and the Tokef HaTuma. The power on the good side and on the bad side. Like Yavan, we talked about in Chanukah, everyone talks about that you have a Chachma Yavanis, you have Greek wisdom, and now is battling Jewish wisdom. But it's on the same playing field. So here is the godless of Paro, of being able to help and go out and start doing the hard labor himself. And that's against Moshe. Paro was doing it for his nefarious purposes. And Moshe was doing it because he loved everybody and because he cared. So, there's another Medrash. It says that when the Jewish people left Egypt, it says he took his nation with him. And why did he? Why? What does it mean he took them with him? He took them with him with words. Because he said, "I'm going to go in front of you. I'm going to go in front of you, and then we're going to split up the booty." So, you see the same, that, and that convinced them, if you're going in front and you're going to split up the booty with us, then we're going to follow you. So that's the Paro. Now, so, now we get to, we had Moshe, we had Paro, and what's the Vayavayamu you talk about the shofar gadol? So obviously the shofar gadol isn't merely talking about the sides of the shofar. That's what I said, we read in Haftorah. Vayomu you talk about the shofar gadol, Bovdim Be'eretz Ashur, V'nidachem Be'eretz Yisrael, V'shtachavu HaRashem HaKodesh B'Yerushalayim. So it's not one of those big shofars that guys have at the Kotel that just go round and round that are really long. But rather, it's for those people, Bovdim Be'eretz Ashur. What's the Bovdim Be'eretz Ashur? Ashur is Milashan Osher. Rich is wealth. Those people who came from places of wealth, they didn't know how to do it. They didn't know what to do with their wealth. A lot of people use the wealth for themselves. Vanidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim. And those who are pushed away in Mitzrayim, the narrow places, Mitzrayim means narrow places, the difficult places, so they're all going to come to Hashem, to Har HaKodesh Yerushalayim, and then those who have are now going to be able to share with those who don't have. And that's what Mashiach's time is going to be. It's not going to be a time of taking. It's going to be a time of giving. So that's the three gedolim that we have in this week's parasha. The one gadol is Moshe, Alatzad HaTov, that he was able to give, that his whole essence was pulling people out of the water, was pulling people out of Tzoros, was helping people, pulling people out of Egypt. That was the essence of Moshe. And then you have Paro, who also said, I'll help and I'll give. And therefore the Mitzvah trusted him. They said, yeah, we're going to go with you. And therefore they didn't want to send the Jewish people out of Egypt until the very end. Finally they said, we can't take it anymore, let them go. Because Paro was somebody they could trust. He was a gadol. They saw he was somebody who cared, who wanted to give. But he really wasn't a giver. He was only doing it for himself. But at least externally he was. And that's on the side of Tumah. And then the third gadol is that when Mashiach comes, so then those who didn't know how to use their wealth, the Ashur, people from places of Osher, they're going to be able to share it with the less fortunate, and that's what godless means. So what does this have to do with the days of Shovavim? What does it do with the days of Shovavim? So we know that Shovavim, what the tikkun is, the tikkun of, we're trying to fix the sin of Arayos. Anything that relates, all these parashas were in Egypt, right? That's, Egypt was called Ervas Haaretz, the nakedness of the land. So if you think about it, what's really at the Yisod of the chait of Zera Levatala? It's a sin of Zera Levatala, probably never heard of it. But there are people in the world, sometimes, you know, they're sitting in their room, they're bored. What's his Zera Levatala? Where did that come from? Why would somebody waste his seed? Why would somebody want to do that? What's going to happen? It's going to go on the bed sheet, and then all of a sudden children are going to start coming from the bed. They're going to be new children. No! It's just wasted. It goes, and it's gone, it's finished. So what's the purpose? What's the purpose? The purpose is one thing. The purpose is that I want to give myself pleasure. That's the beginning, and that's the end. It doesn't have anything to do. You know, in Judaism, we're not against giving seed. It's a mitzvah when you're married, and you have a wife. So it's a mitzvah to be with your wife. So if it's a mitzvah to be with my wife, so then if I don't have a wife, then why can't I just be with myself? The answer is that even though externally it's the same thing, it's the giving of seed and having pleasure, it's the same thing, but it's diametrically opposed. Why? Because if you're with somebody else, then you're giving to somebody else. It's an act of giving, it's an act of love. And if you're with yourself, then it's a narcissistic act of self-gratification. It's just, what can I give myself? I want to give myself pleasure. I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy myself. It's all about me. So it makes a person immersed with themselves, and that's the exact opposite of gadol. A gadol is somebody who's able to give to others, and here it's an act of purely giving to yourself. You're walking down the street, and all of a sudden, lo and behold, there she is, a pretty girl. So you have two options. You can keep looking at her, or you can walk on and forget about it. So, if you take the first option, why are you taking the first option? Is anything to do with her? Nothing to do with her. You don't care about her. You just like the pleasure that she gives you. There's no relationship involved. Somebody, Rachman Litzlan, goes on the internet and looks at inappropriate things on the internet. So, there's no relationship here. You don't have to give anything to the other person. That's why people... imagine every time you looked. Yes, imagine every time you looked at this picture. So, you know, you'd have to give her your credit card. Yeah, and you'd have to give her your car keys. And you'd have to get up in the middle of the night and take care of her baby. So it wouldn't be so interesting to look at her anymore. Right? That's what marriage is. When you're married to somebody, you have to give. When you're not married, when you're just using them for pleasure, so you just look at the picture. Ah, that's nice. And the person goes on. I assume he does another click, and then he looks at another picture. And it's just, what can I take from this person? You don't care. The person could die. The person could be alive. The person could be... couldn't care less. It's just about giving myself pleasure. That's all, everything. That's why I learned, I thought a lot about this topic. It's very hard to convince somebody to stop. Because people are so in love with themselves and their own pleasure, that how do you convince? People get angry at you. People don't get angry at you. People get angry at me. People get angry at me when they say, stop living your life in order to maximize your pleasure. Stop trying every area of your life maximize your pleasure. To eat as much as you can, to sleep as much as you can. All the different physical pleasures we have in America, that's what we're taught the purpose of life is. That's what life is. You're supposed to have a good time. You're supposed to enjoy yourself. If you have to go to work, if you have to give, so otherwise how are you going to be able to make money? How are you going to be able to enjoy yourself? So it's just a means to the end. What's the goal? Is the goal the week or is the goal the weekend? The goal is always the weekend, right? Because during the week, I'm working. So then on the weekend, I can drink beer and then watch a punter punt it to the wrong guy and have him score a touchdown and disappoint millions of people. So that is what people are waiting all week for. Sometimes they're disappointed at the end of the week, depending on whether you come from Philadelphia or New York. But people are waiting all week for that. And then they can kick back and they can take a beer. There used to be a commercial, Michelob. A guy kicks back and he says, "It doesn't get any better than this." You know, you see this guy in his dungarees, you know, and he's got his baseball cap on, and he's got his foot. I mean, this is the highest level of pleasure in this world. He has his foot elevated, yeah, and he has it sitting like this, and he's got a beer, and he drinks a beer. You say to him, no, that's not what life is about. But this commercial is telling you, no, that is what life is about. If you can have this pleasure of drinking cold beer and watch 11 oversized men try to paralyze each other, yes, then you are living it up. Now, we realize the 11 oversized men trying, that's not enough. Because football is exciting. What's more exciting? What's more exciting really is what's going on out of bounds. And everybody knows that. Out of bounds, I'm assuming on all four corners of the stadium, there's something else there to excite most of the fans. Now, a person doesn't need to know when to cheer and when not to cheer. If your team scores, you cheer. If the other team scores, you don't cheer. So why do they have to get 85% naked women telling you they don't know anything about football? Why do they have to tell the men who understand the game when to cheer? The answer is it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with men want pleasure. So therefore they're going to put these young future Rebbitzins at the different corners of the stadium, and then men are going to be able to look. Oh, and they're going to jump up and down. And we know that when they jump up and down, so obviously that adds, if they would just stand there like this, you know, like this, you know, pulling down their skirt, that's not going to happen. But they jump up and down, and they throw them, yay team, and then they have their little pom-poms. So that is all about giving yourself pleasure. And that's what Shomim is. Shomim, these parashiyos, they say, it's not about you. It has nothing to do, that's not why you were created. You're created to receive. You were created to be a gadol. It says, "Vayas Avraham ishte gadol biyom higamel es Yitzchak." Avraham made a party, a big party, on the day that Yitzchak was weaned. Why do you make a weaning party? Because when you stop nursing from your mother, that means that you're a less dependent person, and that's a reason to have a party. The second now you're on your own. Now you can start giving. But as long as you're waiting for your... So you're just taking. I, Baruch Hashem, God bless me. I had a little baby, right? We sang to me 7 weeks ago. So my baby, 8 weeks ago. And baby, we noticed, we count. Now that you're young, you count how many weeks. She's eight. So my mother-in-law wanted me to name her Batsheva, because that was my mother-in-law's mother's name. So this past week, she was Batsheva. She was 7 weeks. But now she's Batshimon, so it's a different name. The baby takes. The baby doesn't know how to give. I mean, the baby's giving me a lot just by being there, and, you know, gives me obviously a lot of simcha. But from the baby's perspective, the baby has a perspective, it's just, now I need my bottle. Now I need to go to sleep. Now I need to burp. Now I need to be changed. Now I need to be bathed. And that's what a baby is. Getting older, and the older you get, means now I have to give more and more. And that's what society expects of you. When you're younger, you're supposed to be taking. And then the older you get, the more you're supposed to be giving. The problem is that many people never get out of that mindset. And they look externally like they're giving, but they're not really giving. They're taking. And everybody knows, and if you don't know, then you should know, or you will know, Amir Tashem, that Rav Dessler has a famous essay in the Michtav Meliel. He says there are two types of people in the world. They're givers and they're takers. Everybody gives and everybody takes. But the givers are people who give in order to take, and they give in order to give, and they take in order to give. And the takers are people who take in order to take, and they give in order to take. So some people, you guys in a few years, you're going to get married. So two perspectives on marriage. One is, what can I get out of this girl? What can I get from her? First of all, she has to be pretty, so I enjoy looking at her. Second of all, she has to make me dinner, because I'm not living at home anymore with my mother. My mother can't serve me anymore, so now she has to serve me. Third of all, she has to do my laundry, because my mother's not going to clean my smelly socks anymore, so now she has to clean my smelly socks. And the fourth thing she has to do is, and she also has to have babies for me. And then the fifth thing she has to do is, and the sixth thing she has to do is, now she's not going to just keep giving me if I don't give her. So also I'll give her something also from time to time, but I'm always looking at what I'm going to get out of it. So that is the perfect recipe for divorce. Now, why don't people know that? Why don't people just not do that? Nobody wants to get divorced. The answer is, Because it's so natural that a human being should want to take. That's our animalistic side. What the Tanya would call the nefesh habemis. Our animal soul just wants to take. So the godly soul wants to give. So before you get married, you sit with yourself the day of the chuppah, and you dunk yourself in the mikvah. Yes, you're in the water like Moshe Rabbeinu. And then when you pull yourself out of the water, you say to yourself, now I'm going to get married tonight. And from now on, I'm going to be a giver. Like Moshe Rabbeinu, can I marry? See, my job is to give. And then you'll be eternally happy. Why? Because you're never going to have any complaints against her. Because you're not going to be demanding of her. Because you're here to give. And to give, you're probably going to find somebody who's going to want to take. And then when you have children, I know a lot of parents like this. It looks like they're giving to their children, but they're really taking. What are they taking? They're giving the kids the money, and they're giving the kids an education. What do the parents want in return? They want a degree. They want nachas. They want to say, ah, my son the lawyer, my son the doctor. So we, parents, myself included, sometimes get, I want my son to be a lawyer or a doctor or get a degree, but I have my own things I want for my son. So we get into this trap of thinking, what can I get out of this person? What can I take? What pleasure can I have from this person? Well, I'm not thinking of what can I give to this person that's good for this person. And the same thing applies to your friends. As you have friends, it's not about what can I give. If, as long as this friend is a good friend to have and fun, so I'll be his friend. But the moment it stops being that way, then what am I getting out of it? That's always the big question. What am I getting out of it? So that is not the Jewish question. The Jewish question we learned tonight is, what am I giving to it? What am I giving? And the moment you have that perspective, then you're not interested anymore. You're not interested in looking at pictures you're not supposed to look at. You're not interested in the Avera we mentioned before. You're not interested in going to the movies. You're not interested in all these things. Because all these things are just ways of just taking for yourself, in order to take for yourself, but without any thought of what you're being able, what you're going to give to the other person, how you're going to help society receive benefit from you. And that's really the goal of a Jew in life, is to be a giver, like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, who's cool on Noah, saying it doesn't need anything, and that's the way we should all be. And if we do that, I have no doubt that if we go on the path of Moshe, who is a Gadol, and Avram, who is a Gadol, we will live lives of Simcha.